collected Danny Shule.
Now, why are there two things on it?
This is a USB drive, not just a computer thing.
Whatever. Okay, it's all rolling?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. Time is perfect. Today is January 27th, 2013, Sunday afternoon. Still fairly nice weather here, preparing for some rain, which the ground needs in the Kinneret. We're 2 meters away from a full Kinneret, which is practically miraculous. And in New York, they are freezing. So whether you like it or not, you have to be happy you're here at this moment in time. I want to dedicate today's shiur a Talmud, a dear Talmud of mine, who's been my Talmud for many decades. His father died last week, and Joe Kaslow, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, went through the Holocaust, reestablished himself in the States. Joe and Dina, a couple, Litiferet, and he had a special schut. It's a Litvish family, the Kaslows. And I remember Reb Nosson Kamenetsky, going back now to the early 70s, Reb Nosson always used to say to me, Kaslow is unique, those are real Litvakin. But his father, who died at 88, had a real schut because he was born and raised in Ivya. Ivya was a suburb of Vilna, and he yet knew Reb Shlomo David Grzynski, the Rav of Vilna, of Ivya, who was Reb Chaim Moshe Grzynski's father. And he later was succeeded by Reb Moshe Shatskis, who was Ivya Rav, before he goes to Lamsha. So that whenever I would get together with Dr. Kaslow's parents, occasionally we would discuss Reb Shlomo David, Reb Moshe Shatskis, and it was really, really a thrill that he was a man who bridged these worlds. I'll add another thought about him. He never had a machloket in his life. His wife, Dina, should live and be well. She's not well. She's no youngster either. They were married, I would say, on to 60 years. And Dina said she never had an argument with him because he always gave in. He never argued. He was such a ish shalom that he never, ever argued. And I want to dedicate the shiur in his memory. Now, the question of finding a new manuscript, it's a most fascinating question. And here you have an open Ramah where the Ramah says you have to give credence if you find something that you cannot say halacha kabat ra'i. And here you see the Chazon Ish, and I showed you last week the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and not only the Lubavitcher Rebbe, but Reb Menashe Klein quoting the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and you see many, many of the famous Rabbonim of our generation line up with the Chazon Ish. And walking back from the Kotel, Ephraim said to me that Professor Danny Sperber paints the Chazon Ish as a dat yachid, but you see it's absolutely not true. And today I want to start this year dealing with Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. And I showed you, we ended off the shiur last week with a quote from a tshuva drasha that was given. I would imagine that this tshuva drasha is, not a tshuva drasha, a yahrzeit drasha, I would imagine that it was given in the early 50s. I don't have an exact date, but I can tell you it's after I started attending the yahrzeit drashas, and the first yahrzeit drasha I went to, if my memory is correct, was 1954. And I don't recall that it was on this topic. And the Rav dealt with Mesorah. And we said last week that there are two types of Mesorah. I'm quoting Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik now. There's a Mesorah of the intellect and a Mesorah of practically what we do. And when it comes to practice, the Rav felt very strongly we cannot change the traditions our parents handed us. And he told the story, and this is well known, but now you have a printed source for it, why his Elder Zayda, the Beit HaLevi, for whom he is named, would not put on Tchelet on the Tzitzit. And you have to understand, a lot has been written in modern times. It's a very fascinating topic, because the Rajime came up with one type of Tchelet, Rav Herzog came up with another type of Tchelet, and as you know, in Israel, there's an entire, I use the word industry, with the Tchelet Tzitzit, with research, but the Rav Elter Zayda refused to put on Tchelet Tzitzit. He said, this is not the Mesorah we received from our parents. Now, I want to go one step further. And I quoted to you Sherim Lezecha Abba Murray. I'm quoting from page Resh Nun. And see, here the Rav goes a little bit deeper. And this is literally the heart of understanding Torah Shabbal Peh. The Rav says when it comes to the intellectual tradition, there can always be machleket. Everyone understands a concept differently. You all know when you open up a Gemara, Nehematai Karinat Akriyat Shema Shel Erev Shel Laila, right away there are three different opinions. And that's the first Mishnah. And you go to any Mishnah, you're going to find different opinions. You open up the Gemara, you're going to find different opinions. So the Rebbe says, on an intellectual level, we're entitled to machleket from today to tomorrow, and it's exactly what I've quoted Rebbe so many times, and I quote him again. When you learn Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, you cannot say that it's a bigger mitzvah to learn Beit Hillel because the halacha is like Beit Hillel. Chas v'chalila. When you learn Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, it's the same Torah Shabbat Peh. It's the same mitzvah. It's the same learning. It's the same schar. It's the same Talmud Torah. But on a practical level, there's never machleket. Once this theoretical machleket is over, the halacha is decided, this is the tradition that is passed on to us. And there, chas v'chalila, if you do like Beit Shammai, you're not a good Jew. We paskin like Beit Hillel. So you see, there's a very fine difference here. And we'll come back to this later because we're going to get involved with the status of the Shulchan Aruch. But this is a very profound understanding. Give me 1 second, Yitzchak. And you see that he lines up with the Chazon Ish. Okay? And now I'm going to go, what everyone asked me about, when am I going to quote my own scholarship? Now I'm ready to quote it. But I'm ready to quote something you know, and something perhaps you didn't pay attention to. Yes, Yitzchak.
What disturbs me greatly, very greatly, is the conservative movement and the reform movement less, because once the Freedom is dead, and they don't have anybody, Kharkowski also, that they will quote you a Das Yochid. They have a source.
Right.
And everything that you say is what they do. In other words, they'll pick one.
That's what you have to answer. That when it comes to theoretical thinking, intellectual thinking, wonderful what you found. We have a right to deal with it. When it comes to halacha, we can only do what our parents gave us. What the dor shelafanecha, al tzaddikim v'al chassidim v'al ziknei amcha beit Yisrael v'al Pleitat Sofreihem. And you all know the Rav's thought that you can be, if you want to be a tzaddik, you want to be a chassid, you want to be a zakein, you must be part of the Pleitat Sofreihem. And that's a very, very powerful concept that, to me, is the heart of understanding why we're Jews, what Torah Shabbat Peh is all about. And we're caught up with that when you take all the questions of feminism today. You come into the heart of the issue. Do we follow Shitat Dechuyot or do we follow tradition? Where do we draw the line? This is the heart of the issue that we face today.
Sperber.
Right?
Sperber has aligned himself
with the conservative, with the right-wing conservative movement. I'm well aware of that. I said, if Danny Sperber, who I know from the day I came on Aliyah, said, he's a brilliant fellow. But when you come out that women can have an Aliyah and it reaches the front page of the New York Times in the year 2013, you are going against tradition. You're going against your father. You're going against your grandfather. And you're opening up the Pandora's box. Because it's not only the Aliyah is the least of the problems. Look what happened with Aguna. And remember, that's a human tragedy. A woman can't remarry. Husband refuses to give a get. No, take it one step further. Hafkat Kedushin. And they come up with some sheet. I'm well aware what they come up with, but what they're from Mitzrayim, but it's not even halachically sound. I'll get to it. God should spare us a number of years from now. I'll get to it in great depth. But you hit the nail on the head. And this is what the Rebbe is saying in this drasha. And this is like the Chazon Ish. And with all due respect, that you see what the Chazon Ish says, that manuscripts constantly are coming to the fore, but tradition, what's handed to us by the previous generation, is what we have to follow. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe agrees, Rebbe Menashe Klein agrees, the Rav agrees. I'll show you the Rav yet, but I'm going to show you disagreement in a minute, but you have to know how to handle it, and that I'll come to in Kuntres Hashach. Yes, yes, Herbie.
You mentioned feminism. You mentioned follow traditions.
Right.
How do you think Shulamit started? How do you think Beit Yaakov started? They went against tradition.
We dealt with that in great depth. I gave 1 year of lectures on feminism. I can't redo it now. But I want to tell you, what you just said is not entirely true. You just read that you were in Shul Shabbos, Shabbos Shira, you read the Haftorah. Who's the Haftorah all about? The Vora HaNeviah. So you see that there were women who were great, and there were women who were Lamdaniyat, but they were the exception. Today, we no longer have to allow them to be an exception. Because today, where a woman is getting a full education, if she doesn't have a Torah background, she will be swept away. But there is tradition of outstanding women. There was a woman who was a Rosh Yeshiva. The Mashal's great-grandmother was a Rosh Yeshiva. Said Sheyurim. Rashi's daughters. I quoted that, absolutely. Breria. So I'm answering you, but that's answering you quickly now. You have to hear a year's worth of Shavurim. It didn't start in the 20s. It started in the 1890s. But Sarah Schneera began the Beis Yaakov World War One time. And Shulamit begins later. And you know who headed up Shulamit for many decades? Saul Lieberman's wife, Yehudit Berlin Lieberman, was the head of Shulamit. Now, but we're dealing here with the narrow question. You discover a new manuscript. What's its status? So here I quote to you from the Rav, Volume 2, beginning on page 27 and 28. And what I did here was I translated word by word. 1 second, let me just check. Yeah, the Rav said this in Pashat Chukot. He said it in English. I heard the Ravs tell the story in Yiddish. I heard him tell the story in English. Here, he told it in English. I give you the exact source so you can check back to the tape, which is readily available. It was at an RCA convention. And I recorded it word by word. Now, Rav Heschel Schechter also has this thought in Nefesh HaRav on page 248, but it's not word by word. I have it word by word. And I remind myself I had an encounter quite a number of years ago with a representative of the so-called Chachmat Yisrael. And I put into brackets here, Wissenschaft des Judentums. He was a very outstanding scholar. Now, the Rav didn't reveal his name in public, but Rabbi Lichtenstein told me it's Professor Shaul Lieberman. It could be that when Heschel writes, Rabbi Heschel writes it up, it could be he mentions Shaul Lieberman's name. I don't recall. And you have to understand, the Rabbi Shaul Lieberman were related by marriage, because Rav Shaul Liebman lost his first wife. She died. It's a very sad chapter in his life. She was married to the Minsker Gadol's granddaughter, and she died quite young in Jerusalem after that Kamen Aliyah. It's clouded in secrecy. He never would talk about it. Rumor has it they were so poor that they didn't have money for her to go to a doctor. She was pregnant. There were complications. There was no money. And this is why I will never criticize Professor Liebman for going to America and taking the invitation to go to the seminary. I don't say I would do it or you should do it, but to criticize, I won't criticize. Alter Dinit, you can't judge someone until you were in that same situation. So it's a very sad story. He remarried Bezivik Sheni, Reb Meir Berlin's daughter. And of course, Judith Berlin, Reb Meir Berlin's daughter, was a cousin to the Rav. Or an aunt. I mean, figure out the relationship. Maybe she was an aunt to the Rav, a great aunt. I mean, they were basically the same age, or she was slightly older, but she was the Netziv's granddaughter, and the Rav was the Netziv's great-grandson. So she married Professor Liebman. They never had children. And his outstanding student, Professor Dov Zlotnik, with whom I daven every morning for years already, many times Minchamarv as well when I daven in Yad Tamar, he was the executor of Professor Liebman's will. He had no children, but he had a very wonderful student in Professor Dov Zlotnik. And I told you, when Dov Zlotnik went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe and asked the Rebbe if she'd leave the seminary, and I heard the same story from Professor Aaron Kirschenbaum, right? The exact same story, that he went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and the Rebbe answered both of them, Kol's man, as Professor Liebman is in the seminary, darfst du bleiben. If that Professor Liebman's there, you have to be there. And if you know the Lubavitcher Rebbe, you can understand it, Moshe, understanding, because he was out to bring back every Jew he possibly could. So the fact that someone was in the seminary was immaterial to him. You had to be there, l'karev. So evidently, this took place at a family simcha. If my memory is correct, it was at a Brit Milah. I have a footnote, so obviously that's what Rav Aaron told me, was at a Brit Milah, a family simcha. And the Rav and Rav Shaul Liebman are talking and learning. And the Rav says, he told me that lately they had discovered a parchment, a Megillah scroll, in which it was stated unequivocally that a Kohen is enjoined from defiling himself with the sherets. Now, you all know a Kohen, how many Kohanim are in the room? You all know a Kohen can't defile himself bisman hazeh to a dead body. You can't go to a funeral, right? You can't be in, when a Kohen goes into the hospital, it's a whole shaila if he's allowed into the hospital. Am I right or wrong? Outside Shaarei Tzedek, I think even outside Ein Karim, probably in Har Tzofim, there's a sign up where the Kohanim are allowed to enter or not. If there's a body being transported to the morgue, they don't allow a Kohen to enter. So you all understand, there's a very big shiloh. What about if someone is a nurse and her father comes to visit her, Zila, and he's a Kohen? This is a shiloh that really repeats itself in so many different circumstances. You have you're a rabbi. How is Rabbi Riskin built such an important synagogue? He was a Kohen, but only Rabbi Riskin. When Rabbi Riskin eulogized someone, they brought the microphone outside. And he eulogized from the outside. He had to be careful not to stand under the awning that was in front of Riverside Plaza on the west side of Manhattan. It was 79th Street, if my memory is correct. Anyway, but a Kohen... What about if a Kohen is walking on the street today and he sees a dead mouse? Is he allowed to pick up the mouse? No, I'm asking a simple question. A Kohen sees a dead mouse, a sheretz. Is he allowed to pick it up? Absolutely. At the time of the Beit HaMikdash, the Kohen would go to mikveh, would purify himself. But there's nothing wrong with touching the sheretz. You're only enjoined from being in Dalet Amot of a mate, or being under a tree with a mate, or being in an ohel with a mate. But a sheretz, you're allowed. And here they found this tabiad, that a Kohen is enjoined from defiling himself with the sherets. So the Rav said, I said to him, do you take it seriously? Of course, he answered, very seriously. And here the Rav throws in, they, the devotees of Chachmat Yisrael, have the answer right away. It is a different Kabbalah, a different tradition. They operate with traditions in the plural. So here the Rav pulled the shtick. You see, he tells he had a very good sense of humor, and the audience was hysterical. What did the Rav do? Look, in life, I don't know why, but it's people are jealous of each other. I don't know. Akina kavod v'ataiva motziyim et hadam min ha'olam. So, I say it's not the... There are three different periods in life. When you're young, it's taiva. Oh, I don't have to tell you already what goes on in life. We don't have to elaborate. Wine, women, and song. Ha'taiva. Then, of course, there's kinna. You reach middle age, the age of Mishlei, and I went to yeshiva with this guy who was a jerk. He's a big professor today. He's a big Rosh Yeshiva. He has recognition, and I'm just as smart. I'm even smarter than he is, and I'm better than he is. And you're jealous that kinna eats away at you. Look what he achieved, and look where I am. I don't want to give examples, but what we have seen in life. Then you reach my age, Kohelet already. Ugh, covered. What people, why aren't I recognized? Why don't people, what I did in life? And you all know, I'm going to show you in class this new book that came out. Malka and I are flabbergasted. A book came out on what the Mossad did in Russia. And the stars of the book are Malka and Arakefet. And no one owes me anything. And I don't have an institution behind me. I'm getting acknowledgement. I'm getting covered in this world. Something's the matter. Something is wrong, Yitzchak. But anyway, Ikhakina, think of my, you like the vod? Taiva first, Kina Mishlei, and Kohelet covered. And we had Rebbeim, God have mercy, what we saw in our lives with Rabbanim over covered. If you followed the election and the Haredi blogs, what went on, who you sit where, guts all up hidden over COVID, what goes on, it's beyond my comprehension. All right. So the Rav knew.
Is this book printed in English or Hebrew?
Which book? No, Hebrew. I'll show you. I have it in my office already. I have it. I have a pre-publication copy someone got for me. But there's going to be a book launch. So I told them, please tell me if it's any night outside of Sunday, I want to be at the book. I want to get more copies. I want to ask my daughters if they want a copy. I don't know. You know, each one goes in their own world. It'll be interesting to see if my daughters are interested in what their parents did. Well, they'll say, well, we're dealing with our grandchildren now. That's ancient history. We'll see. I'll let you know how I stand. Anyway, one daughter already asked me for a copy. So, gentlemen, the Rav knew this concept of kinna. Among professors, it is really pronounced. Why, I don't know, but I had professors, if you mentioned the name of another professor, there was a hole in the ceiling. So the Rav said to Professor Liebman, and we don't know the name, who he mentioned. I have my own theory. It has to be someone at Hebrew U that had a very big reputation. And he said to Professor Liebman, tell me, Reb Shaul, what do you think about Professor so-and-so? Professor, an amoritz, an idiot, a boor, an idiot, he doesn't know how to put an olive bread together. He writes with a piece of chalk and then like a butcher's errand boy. He's a professor? And after Rav Shaul calmed down, the Rav said to him, quote, so only we have a monopoly on boors and not my Haaretz meteorite? 1,500 years ago, there were also boors and not my Haaretz. Since there was no paper, the boor had to write on parchment. So you found nice Chidushei Torah. So what? And the Rav, the audience is hysterical, and the Rav adds, and this is a true story. It actually happened. Now, what do you see from that story? You see exactly the Chazon Ish. that this is the Chazon Ish, this is Rav Menashe HaKotin, this is this Lubavitcher Rebbe, and the Rav lines up right on their side. One, two, three. A, B, C. Fascinating. And these are different worlds. No one will accuse the Rav of being in the Rebbe's world. No one will accuse the Rav of being in the Chazon Ish's world. And no one will accuse the Chazon Ish of being in Rav Menashe HaKotin's world. These are totally different worlds, but they line up. Okay. Now, I have to give Ephraim credit. He asked me a fabulous question walking back from the cult of Friday night, which I was going to deal with. No, gentlemen, I have a friend named Aaron Rakefet, Dash Rothkopf. The greatest thing that ever came out of his teaching in the Kollel were the two volumes on the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Right or wrong? No? What happens in his biography? He goes to Berlin. He has an uncle, Reb Menachem Korakovsky. Reb Menachem Korakovsky, who was married to Badana Feinstein. Reb Eliyahu Prishna had a number of daughters. One daughter, Pesha, married Reb Moshe. One daughter, Badana, who later perishes in the Holocaust, married one of the outstanding Talmidim of Volozhin, Reb Menachem Korakovsky. No? What sefer did he publish? Lo Aleinu, he had a manuscript in the entire Rambam. There was no money to publish it. He died in 29. They finally published right afterwards his manuscript on Sefer Madav, Sefer Ahava, and everything else was lost in the Holocaust. It's a very, very sad story. And tell me, what's unique about Avodat HaMelech? He's the only one of that era who combined the Russian traditional Talmud Torah with Chochmat Yisrael, and he had appreciation for scientific scholarship, and he bothered the Rav. The Rav is in Berlin. Took advantage of the Rav being in Berlin. Go into the manuscript division of the Berlin Library and look at the Kitvei Yad they have of the Rambam. And the Rav did research for him. And page 28, the Rav, volume 1, when in Berlin, the Rav displayed sensitivity towards manuscripts and the establishment of proper texts. The Vilna Gaon had made this science one of the touchstones of his method of study, but it was generally neglected in the yeshiva method of study. The Rav's uncle, Rabbi Menachem Korakovsky, had authored the Avodat HaMelech on Maimonides' Mishneh Torah. This volume is unique in rabbinical circles, since it combined the traditional yeshiva approach with a keen appreciation for correct textual structure. The Rav was cited 6 times in the Avodat HaMelech for having checked ancient manuscripts in the Berlin libraries for their variant textual readings. Look into my footnote 16, and let me just give you one word of elaboration, because this is very emotional for me. 1983, by then I was heavily involved in Russian activities, and I had to go to America to speak. I went between terms. Malka couldn't go with me yet, we still had young children, and I told the people, make appointments, make this, make that, but the last day, I'm not doing anything, I'm going to the yeshiva, I want to go into Rebbe's class. It was 1983. It's the last time I saw the Rav alive and spoke with him face to face. Came into the class. It was a terrible, traumatic experience. someone who knew the Rebbe in his prime, and he was going so slowly. It was sad to see. After class, the Gaboyim came over to me, and I didn't realize they're honoring me. The Rav couldn't stand up. He needed help. So they honored me to be on the Rav's right side. Rebbe was very happy to see me. He asked me to come back to the apartment with him. And in the apartment, his mind was good. I spoke with him on a number of issues. One of the issues I raised, Rebbe, I'm doing research. I come across the Avodat HaMelech, and you're looking at manuscripts. And the Rav got all excited. His face lit up. Yes, yes, yes. Four times he quotes me. I got back to Israel. I had one Talmud in the Kollel, very unique Talmud, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Klausner. She lived and be well, never married, a genius, never married. That's so rough. Klausner, I said, Klaus, I have an assignment for you. Go through the Avodat HaMelech, find where he quotes our Rebbe. And he found already 6 places, not 4. The Rebbe cited on the Avodat HaMelech, if you want to check it out, page 8a, 8b, 18b, 64b, 77a, and 77b. Now, here you have to raise a very basic question. Will the real Rabbi Soloveitchik stand up? Here he gives a yahrzeit shiur totally opposed to putting on rajima, tzitzit, tchelet. Here he talks about Rav Shaul Lieberman and how he bested him with the you know that professor. What do we have, a monopoly today in Amayaritz? Who says everyone who wrote on parchment 1,000 years ago was a Gadladar that was an Amaritz? What are you getting so excited about? You found a manuscript. And here the Rav, and by the way, in my Shayurim on the Holocaust, I cited some of this material from the Rav. He calls him Ben Gisi, Hagon, Hatzahir. He had tremendous Derech Eretz for the Rav. And here Rebbe is all happy, his eyes are aflame with joy that someone uncovered the Avodat HaMelech quoting the young Rabbi Soloveitchik in the Berlin library. So, who's the real Rav? And I think the answer stares us in the eyes. On an intellectual level, it's very fascinating. What is the correct reading? So many times you can solve a problem in Maimonides if you have the correct reading. On a practical level, it can't affect the halacha. And there's no contradiction here. One is what we call in modern Hebrew, iyuni, and one is ma'asi. On an intellectual level, you see time and again, when you're learning Rambam, how many times does the Kesef Mishnah say the Rambam had a different reading in front of him? And you know yourself, the Rav used to use, and I use Professor Tversky, the Rav son-in-law, Rav Yitzchak Tversky, Professor Israel Tversky, whatever, Tolna Rabbi / Harvard Professor, whichever way you knew Rav Yitzchak. A fascinating individual. And he makes the point too, but we saw it in class all the time, that you always think of the Rambam as a Sefer of Psak. Many times you use the Rambam just to learn Pshat in the Gemara. You come to the Rambam, you see the way he paskins. That's how you know Pshat in the Gemara. You know what was in front of him. You know the Girsa that was in front of him. But that is theoretical learning. When it comes halacha lemaisa, we have to follow that which is in front of us. What our parents gave us, what our grandparents gave us. This is the halacha, this is the minhag, this is the nohag, this is the custom, this is the practice. Imlo neviyimchem b'nei neviyim, smoch al b'nei Yisrael. Hukhazi mai ama dva. Go out and see what the people are doing. This is the way I would approach Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. Now, I have to be intellectually honest with you. There are those who didn't know the Rav. They really didn't know the Rav. In other words, I have the disadvantage or the advantage that I knew the Rav personally. So you understand, what's the disadvantage? I can't write a definitive biography of the Rav because I have a personal prejudice. A definitive biography has to be written 100 years from now by someone who will have access to the Rav's tapes, to the books that are written about the Rav, maybe who want to listen to some of Rakefet's tapes, maybe the tapes from Rabbi Lichtenstein on the Rav, and then he has to put it all together, who is the real Rav in his opinion. You take Moses Mendelssohn, it took about 200 years for a definitive biography to come out, Alexander Altman. See, that's a definitive biography. So that's the disadvantage. On the other hand, the advantage of knowing the Rav is that I knew the Rav, the real Rav. I don't need fairy tales. Someone is finishing a doctorate or just finished a doctorate in Hebrew U on Akkad Kedushin, the Rav's attitude. She brings 100 different perushim. Rakefet says this. I saw it. I guarantee you that my understanding of the Rav on Akkad Kedushin is 100% right. But I knew the Rav. The Rav was a gong, was a tzaddik. It's hard for people to understand that. They knew the Rav was a philosopher. He was homiletically inclined. You can give him all types of titles. But the untas deshura, the bottom line was, the Rav was a gong, was a tzaddik, was a Rosh Yeshiva, was kolat Torah kula, was in his fingertips with tremendous devotion, emotion, and sensitivity. Okay. This is my advantage. But there are others that say that the Rav went through different periods in his life. And when the Rav was in Berlin, he came there of a lojana, of briska, but there he was exposed to scientific Jewish scholarship. And it could be in the 1920s in Berlin, he was caught up in the lure of scientific Jewish scholarship. Later in life, he went back to the roots of his grandparents. And there are people that say that, and therefore they explain, there's no question. The manuscript hunt was the 1920s. The Regina Tzitzit negative attitude was the 1950s. Zelichud, the Zelichud. People have different periods in their life. I do not accept that. There are reasons why. I can't go into many details now, but from my own research, and yet having been privileged to speak with Talmidim Mufhakim of Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg, I have reached a very simple conclusion, but I believe I'm totally accurate. When the Rav came to Berlin, yes, you're correct, new vistas were open. When a person studies, your mind broadens. Your new vistas are open. You can accept, you can reject. Same thing with the Kollel. I can tell you a student that studied here many years ago. He just was in headlines. I wrote him a letter of Yashar Koach. He responded, the Rebbe that you remember. Why shouldn't I remember him? But he once came to me and he said to me, Rebbe, you don't know what you did for me. Until I came to the Kollel, I thought, my way of life is the only way of life, and anyone who's a Mizrachiite is a sinner. And he said, you know, you taught me that there are more points of view, and he broadened. And it changed his entire gestalt. He lives in Israel many years already, does very good things here. So education, you can broaden, you can be challenged, you can accept, you can reject. My understanding, after so many conversations with people who were the right and the left hands of Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg in Hildesheim Rabbinical Seminary in Berlin, was the Rav attended a few classes there, but he rejected that point of view. And Rabbi Chiel Yaakov is quoted by Rakefet in a footnote saying to a student of Avraham Abba Weingart, who lives on Rechov Chenechovsky, married to Rakefet's first student in Michlala in the early Michlala 1971. Yonah Levi married Avram Abba Weingott. And she first heard about the Sri Deish in my class, and then she marries the Sri Deish's Talmud post-World II Talmud Mufak. So the Sri Deish told Avram Abba, yes, the Rav occasionally attended my class, aber kenim nicht rufen mein Talmud. I can't call him my student. He didn't take Rabbi Yochiel Yaakov's point of view. So I don't think there's a contradiction. I think this was a period in life where the Rav had a chance to do favors for his uncle, the Sikhi Vayad, but it does not affect the halacha l'ma'aseh. If you want to take the point of view that I'm wrong and that there were different stages, gesunte hate. I may bring you a proof to the second point of view. We may yet reach it later today. Not reach it next week. Why do you mean I'm to be the commander? I have to be intellectually honest. I'm a Talmud of the Rav. What am I going to play games? Please, you have to be intellectually honest. This is it's a very serious question. In other words, when you look into the Avodat HaMelech, who says, Ben Gisi Hagon Hatzayir, Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi Salavechik, Bichashtinimenu, I asked him to look in, and he gets back to me, he saw the Chavyad, and this is what's written, and the Avodat HaMelech is dancing with joy. But it's a serious question. 40 years later, he's hysterical, poking fun at Professor Liebman with a good joke. And okay, how do you accept it?
Also known as Joe Solo.
No, the rub that Joe Solo has to do with the airline. You got to understand that Mr. Abrams used to, those days you had to make a reservation, right? So Mr. Abrams used to pop in, there was the door, the rub sat here, there was one door here, one door there. So Mr. Abrams used to pop in the front door and he would say, Rabbi Soloveitchik, I'm making a reservation, 1 o'clock plane, okay? Yeah, good. What name should I use? And the Rebbe would say, Joseph Solo, S-O-L-O. Imagine, you didn't need identity. It was before the Arabs destroyed the world. And the class would be hysterical with laughter. And the Rebbe would say, don't you understand that for them, I write Soloveitchik, it'll take 10 minutes till they pronounce it, till they spell it. This way, Solo, I go right on the plane. Oh, we can't forget that. Yitzchak is right. It was very, very funny. How do you know that, Herbie? You didn't learn with the Rav. You were out there busy in your profession. Ah, sorry.
He must have been in your class.
In my time. No, I don't know. Was he older or younger?
Younger.
I remember. New Vogelmuth. Vogelmuth is from Hildesheim Rabbinic Seminary. That's the Rav's best friend. That was his father. That's you're touching upon some of the finest families to come out of Germany. Yeah.
When we talk about that, we have to accept things from the past. Now, for you to be interrupted is really silly stuff. This Namishkeit that you're not allowing fish and meat at the same time. This is a mistaken thing of medicine that they had in the 1600s.
Okay, so
there are people today, they're so swallowed up in it. I was once in a hotel where a person put a piece of gefilte fish on the same plate with some meat. Someone screamed at him and he tramped up the fish.
So I'll tell you, the Rav would agree with you to a certain extent. How do I know it? Because I remember they once asked the Rav Rebbe, they just put down 1 fork. So the Rav said, 1 fork? Okay, take a napkin and wipe off the fork before you have the meat. So you see from that answer that he wasn't exactly thrown away, that you have to have a separate fork, you have to wash it, etc., etc. All right. That should be... No, not the two together. But there are people today, if you use the same fork for the gefilte fish and the meat afterwards, like Yitzchak said, they'll jump on top of you. What are you, a guy, a shake, it's an ice bath, a trumpet it? What are you doing? You need a second fork. You understand? But all right, I wouldn't lose sleep over the problem you raised. Fine.
It's one thing to say they'll wipe off a fork. It's another thing you don't eat fish and meat together.
No, we don't eat meat. We don't eat. 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 But all I can tell you is, Steve, you don't have that problem. Okay? Okay. All right. Now. Yeah, you washed it off. Yeah, that's what... Right, that's Minig Yisrael is to wash it off. Today, Baruch Hashem, today we're wealthy, so we have two forks. It's like I say about, I haven't chashed anything for Pesach in 50 years already. When I first got married, maybe a kos or something, Baruch Hashem, I'm so wealthy today. And I got to, I'll tell you another secret. Paper plates, when I came in Aliyah to the state of Israel, who ever heard of paper plates? Today we have we are wealthy today. Today you have entire stores in Haredi neighborhoods filled with liquor. Every type of liquor under the sun. So what does that show you? Imported whiskeys, schnapps, scotch, Allah Hechshedim, in Haredi neighborhoods. Baruch Hashem, we are wealthy people today. How we're so wealthy, no one has ever figured it out. I mean, the state of Israel.
Well, the truth of man, 3 days before
Pesach. Right.
Half double full of glasses.
Glasses, correct. Soaking. Or fish. Remember? Right. Fish. Baruch Hashem. No. And it's not, but the worst part is that no one today shares a room with their brother. Everyone has a separate room, and kids become very selfish. Then they get married, and suddenly they have to share. Ah, it's a shock. Baruch Hashem. I'm very opposed. I always tell people, even if you have 6 bedrooms, but 2 kids should sleep together. Shouldn't let each one have their own room. But all right, no one listens to me. Each one has their own computer today. Can I hear? Each one has their own TV. Their own, who has a TV? You don't need a TV. Their own screen, their own DVD, etc., etc. Okay, now, I'm going to show you some very fascinating sources continuing the anti-Chochmat Yisrael trend. And then we are going to shift years. And these sources you can work out. First of all, the Chazon Ish, once again, where he's dealing with something halacha lemasa. Chazon Ish, Tehilchot Eiruvin, page Kuf Hei, Amir Aleph, subdivision Yud Bet. And he's dealing with a problem, I don't have to tell you, building an Erev and putting up a Lechi and putting up where you need a Mechitza. These are problems that haunt us until today. I told you, the only place in the world where you can build an Erev with these is in Bethel. Of course, in Bethel, I'm told they went out of their way that no thoroughfare should be wider than Tetzai and Amat. So you never run into the problem of a Rishut HaRabim, the Oraita, perhaps according to the Rambam Shita. But the building an Erev beyond Bethel, you have endless problems. The minute you have what might be Rishut HaRabim, by the way, the Chazon Ish was a tremendous makil in Hilchot Eruvin, and any Erev we build today in Queens, in Brooklyn, in Tel Aviv, in Yerushalayim, in Haifa, you should know, goes back to a tremendous kul of the Chazon Ish, that the fact that you have buildings on all sides knocks out a good deal of the fear of Rishut HaRabim the Oraita, because the buildings themselves become Mechitza. You follow? And in a built-up community, what do you have? The more people you have, the more buildings you have, the bigger the buildings, the more crowded together, etc., etc. But we'll talk about that in the future, not now. Now, what you don't understand is the Gemara we have today. Why was there such a turmoil against Rav Adin Steinfeld? All right, the cynics among us will say very simply, it's probably partially true, that the Art Scroll was going to come out with Schottenstein, and they found some fault with Steinfeld here, there, and they got Rav Shach riled up, and you all know a tremendous cheirim was declared. and the people threw away their Steinsalzes. It was unbelievable. Oinan, the Hasidic world stood behind them because it's a Hasidic Yid. I have yet to find one word in Steinsalz, and I've gone through the entire Shas with all his Yunim and his realia. I've yet to find one word which is against tradition, and you all know I am a big conservative with a small C. I speak broadly, but when push comes to shove, Rabbi Bednar said, I'm the most Haredi guy on the faculty here. I look the least Haredi, but I think the most Haredi. I see Danny Schulman's agreeing. Okay, I'm a Talmud of the Rebbe. I'm not ashamed of it. So one of the, then they had to justify, why are you putting Rabbi Steinsaltz into Chayrim? No, who remembers what they said? He upset the order of the Daf. He upset the order of the Daf? What are you talking about? He has one side, the other side. All right, he didn't put it all on one page, but he didn't mix up pages. You follow me? But they found the Teretz from Baba. Now, if you notice, the new Steinsaltz coming out in English has the original Daf. Doesn't have the Daf that was created by the Makom, what's it called, Machon L'Shas, Machon L'Shas Pavli, that put out the Steinsaltz's set, the original set, the new English translation coming out, which is headed up by Rabbi Heschel Weinreb, and then two of my students are right under him. The new translation, the Daf is the original Daf. Now, who put the Daf together, the Daf that we all use? A publisher in Vilna named Rome, or Ram, R-O-M. It was a family, the man died young, and it's Almana V'Chaim Ram. They put out the Shas 130, 140 years ago. They put the Shas together, they put the order together, and today, tradition, that's the Daf that we use. Any new Gemara has to be based upon what they did with Rashi, with Tosfot. Sometimes Tosfot continues to the next page, sometimes Rashi continues to the next page, but that is the Shas we use, and in any Shas you will open, if they're intellectually honest, they will give credit to the Almana Ram and her sons, Achim. Now, in addition to putting the format together, Daniel, what else did they do? They published certain Rishonim from manuscript, the most famous being Rabbeinu Hananel, the Rach. And here the Chazon Ish says, yes, I saw the Rach, Hanitfas B'Tepus Ram, Avolo Yadanu Im Efshal L'Smolch Al Hanitpasim Mechadash Shekva Hifsiku HaMisoret B'Neihem B'Neinu, I should say. And he says, can we rely upon it? I am doubtful. It was just rediscovered. There's no Misora. And here he's very brutal. The Eif Shalas Mochal and Fasime Kadash. How can we depend upon what they're publishing? Shemeleka Tataka Kvedim Yod. It's very difficult to copy a manuscript. The Yafan Yadei's reason umadakta kimatsui to Yotzvarim Habei. And he says that which we have from earlier generations, every generation looked at it, corrected it, fine-tuned it, liyota dukanit. But here, when something comes out today, just one generation, who knows how many mistakes will make. 20, 30 generations, Gedolei Yisrael, haven't sat over it, haven't sweated, haven't worked to the guts of their very inner being to perfect the manuscript. And you see, the Chazon Ish, right here, black and white, the Rach in Rom edition, I don't know if we can depend upon it. It's new. Johnny come lately. Hasn't been fine-tuned. So you see, the Chazon Ish doesn't budge. Remains consistent with his point of view. My dear students, and now we bring in the man who was the posek of the United States, who put American psak on the map, the man on whose lap we all grew, developed, Reb Moshe Feinstein. And Reb Moshe lines up 100% with the Chazon Ish and every opinion we have quoted until now. And I'll give you two sources. These are fascinating questions that Reb Moshe deals with. First of all, the first source, Igret Moshe, Eben HaEzra, the original Eben HaEzra, which came out in 1974, Tashlad, in the middle of Siman Chsamach Gimel. Now, the Shiloh that he's dealing with here, I'm not going to go into it, but it deals with birth control. Deals with the sugya in Yevamot. If a woman is mishameshet with moch, using cotton to keep the semen from going in, it's a primitive form of birth control. In theory, it resembles what today is called the diaphragm. And Reb Moshe is dealing with the whole question. And the Shor Reb Moshe, a Tosfot HaRash. Now the Tosfot HaRash, these are Sfarim that have come out in the 20th century from manuscript. When I was a kid growing up, I don't believe there was a Tosfot HaRash yet in the Yeshiva Beit Medrash. Today you can get an entire set. And in this sugya, you find that the Tosfot HaRash deals with the Rush in three different places where the Rush himself says exactly the opposite. There will be a met barul anivet ati sheino milashkan harash v'gam hein divrei ta'ut shel tamid to'eh katab zeh tocha Mikan hu ho chachat ha tosvet va harash she hamochu b'me'eha kol shana. V'im kein eich yifrosh kan harash shechu liyachat ha'ashmish. V'lo yifrosh eich lefarish kein. Neged Rashi v'tosvet. And what he's talking about is, suddenly you come along and you find the Tosvet HaRash, and the Tosvet HaRash says...
This is Rash
of the Rosh. Tosvet HaRash. Harash, I should say. You're right. It's the Tosfot. It's additions to the Rush and the Balei Tosfot. Tosfot HaRash. Who is it written by? Their students. And here you find an open contradiction that what are we talking about? Moch Dachuk, was it during the time of sexual relations? Was it only after the sexual relations? When did she use this method of birth control? And you find an open contradiction. And what Reb Moshe says here is very fascinating. Who wrote this down? Students. Students only understand their Rebbe to a certain point. Don't you have in Shas time and again, Chesky, where two students have different traditions in the name of the same Rav? And don't you have time and again contradictions like this? What are they lying? Chas v'chalila. But this is the human shtanz, the human configuration. You can walk out of shir and each one will swear, the Rebbe said this, the Rebbe said that. And that's why Reb Moshe says, we can't suddenly depend upon a Tosfot HaRash about a new manuscript that came along, because It contradicts what we have elsewhere. And these are students who simply didn't understand their Rebbe properly. And here, what's bothering you, Ephraim? You look troubled. I understand, but Tosfot have been fine-tuned by 1,500 years of Gedolei Yisrael learning Tosfot. Here you're coming up with a Ketav Yad, and suddenly you want to upset the whole apple cart. It's a big difference. But here I want to tell you a story. I'm recording for posterity. Bididi Haviyuvta. Those of you familiar with a book called From Washington Avenue to Washington Street know the story that a bunch of hard-headed American kids, punk-nosed, wise Alex, decided there was no Rebbe who could teach them, and only the love could give them shir. So they drove the administration crazy, and finally in 1957, the Rebbe agreed to give a college shir. Okay, we go into the shir, and Sanhedrin, the Rav, he was a mile a minute, quick, shooting a shist, taking notes. So one or two fellows in the shir were older and they took good notes. So when the Rav announces a bechina, we went, this is before mimeograph machines, photocopy machines, we created stencils. We mimeographed, if that's the word. Am I using the right word, Yitzchak? That was the word we used, right? Mimeographed stencils. We ran off copies of the notes of one of the top fellows in the shir, who was about 2-3 years older than us. He already was in the smicha program, but in addition to going to the halacha shir, for the smicha boys, he came to the college shir. And we gave it out before the exam. And the Rav walks in to say, shir. And he sees a pack of notes, stenciled, mimeographed, and all hell breaks out. He is furious. So he said, Rebbe, what are you getting so upset? We're all sitting here scribbling notes. So he made a nice edited version of someone's good notes. What? You don't understand. If someone finds your notebook, they know it's yours. All right. Rakefik wrote notes. Rothkopf wrote notes. All right. Rothkopf, how much did he know? He's an idiot. Doesn't know anything. Say that. You're not going to take it that seriously. A kid of 17, 18 writing notes? Big deal. But if they see it in a printed form, a mimeograph form, they're going to think I approved it, that it's official notes. And this I cannot allow. He was a brisker. He was, as Yitzchak understands, a perfectionist. And he was not ready to go public with his notes. And that's exactly what Reb Moshe says. Students write notes. All right, you found the manuscript. Some Chaim Yankel wrote notes. He made mistakes. There aren't 15 generations or 20 generations that went through these notes and fine-tuned them and polished them. Can't accept it. Exactly like the Rav. I'll never forget that incident. And that went on. You should know that went on and went on. The Aaron Bad, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, you don't recognize the name. He was a YU Musmach. He died a few years ago. I miss him dearly. So Rabbi Aaron Bad, one of the most eloquent people, it's the son of Rabbi Charles Bad, one of the most eloquent people you'll ever meet in your lifetime. So Aaron...
Did he live on
Rav Chen? He lived around the corner from me, yes, on Rav Chen. And Aaron... I'm Brody. And the Rav, David Applebaum lived in Rav Chaim. And the Rav knew him. Why? Because his father, they were from New Haven. The Rav was from Boston, the New England crowd. His father was Rabbi Charles Bat of New Haven. A Balabasu at Smicha from Terev Adas. These were top, there were so few Torah people. So the Rav knew him. He trusted him. So he recorded the Rav Sheirim. The Rav would not leave the room until he had the tape in his hands. Chas v'chalila, someone might sneak it away and make a copy. You understand? All right. This was the Rav. I'm ashamed to tell you, and I'll add one more word, then I want to go further. I'm ashamed to tell you, when I started teaching, you know, you imitate your Rebbe. So I pulled the same shtick. I'm teaching in Rehov HaBarbanel 24. No recordings. And there's a kid sitting right in front of me by the name of Jay Holzer. And I notice he comes to class every day with a paper bag. And I think he's bringing a lunch, a supper, a bite. I mean, it's not like here, Hefka. There was a kitchen there and food, but I don't know. By March, somehow I opened the paper bag and I see a tape recorder. Ani modela Kadosh Baruch Hu, I grew up very quickly. And I said, Jay, leave that tape recorder open. I take away any Easter. You win. Because of that, there are 1,000+ shurim on the YU website. What happened was that this Talmud, Dr. Kaslow, who I just mentioned, his father, went back to America, early 70s, and pleaded with me to make recordings for him. The rest is history. Okay? Yitzchak, now I'm coming to another topic from Reb Moshe that will tantalize you, because it's right in your ballpark. Tell me. You do mitzvot, you get rewarded. You're on the good list. How does Pirkei Avot say? You get yourself a Sanhedrin, prakletit echad. Tell me. A Gentile comes along. A good human being. George Shultz, Secretary of State. Use him as an example. He does chesed. Does tzedakah. He sends $10,000 to help get Jews out of Russia. Tell me, does he get reward for that? Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noah. Absolutely. All right. The same George Shultz now wants to make Kiddush Friday night. Wants to keep meat and milk separate. Wants his wife to go to mikveh. Does he get rewarded for that? No? Have you ever thought about this? Now, I'll go a step further. This is those of you that have studied the Rambam and all little philosophy know that I'm opening up a minefield. But Reb Moshe deals with it. It's interesting that Reb Moshe should get involved on a philosophic level to a certain degree. I'll give you in a second, but I just want to introduce it. Take another question now. We do mitzvot. Why do we do mitzvot? I wake up in the morning, the first words are saying, Modi, Ani, Lefanecha, Melech, Chai, V'chayim, Shachavata, Binish, Musi, V'chem, L'Rabba, Munatecha. We do mitzvot because we believe. We do mitzvot. L'shem Shemayim, the Chassidim got after us. Hirini Muchan Muzuman, L'shem Yichud Kudsha Brichu. All right, you say it, you don't say it. But the Chassidim got after us, no question about it. Tell me. George Shultz comes along and says, I have met many Jews. By the way, is he alive? I hope he's alive, George Shultz. No, he's not alive. He was a real Ohev Yisrael. You know that. You know why? You know the story. He was teaching a postgraduate course in economics at George Washington University, I believe it was. This was before he was a Secretary of State. And before he was so famous. And the Yom Kippur War broke out, and his top student says, Professor Shultz, I have to go back to Israel to fight in the war. I hope I'll be back shortly. And this was his top student working on a doctorate. And the young man was killed in battle and never came back. And he became such an Ohev Yisrael. You have no idea. Like Scoop Jackson, you know. Scoop Jackson is the fabulous example of a senator from a state where there are no Jews. Who lives in Washington? And what that man did to get Jews out of Russia. Zeichet Tzadik Livracha. So imagine Scoop Jackson says, I want to give charity. I want to be a decent Jew. I want to observe the seven commandments because I believe in God. I believe in the tradition. Fine. That's reward. What about if he says, I want to observe, but I don't really believe in a divine revelation. I simply want to observe because as a human being, I've reached the conclusion that this is enlightening, ennobling. This is the way a human being should live. But God's will is like Mordechai Kaplan. There may or may not be a God. That's unimportant. Judaism as a civilization. No, the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach has a civilization. Does he get reward? Doesn't he get reward? You know how much ink has been spilled on this question? By the way, I can tell you in Australia, Shabbos morning I davened early, I spoke, and my hosts gave me a tour of the whole area. There's one area there where that's where all the from Jews are congregated, and there's so many shuls, and the police cooperate because the cross, most of the streets in Australia, have to press for the light to change. Erev Shabbos and Erev Yontif, everything goes to an automatic system out of respect for all the Jews who live there. So, excuse me? Caulfield is part of the area, absolutely. So I'm walking around, I show me here, then we come to this big shul, and I see a whole group of people walking at a shul with long beards, and they tell me, these people aren't even Jewish. It's a Chabad shul, and these are people who visited with the Rebbe, and they accepted Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. And they're walking out, Shabbos. They're working out of a shul with kippot. Some might have even had black hats. Well, what they do beyond, I don't know. But they said, good Shabbos. And Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. But did they get a reward for observing Shabbos? Okay. Now, I want to tell you, this is a very fascinating topic, halachically and philosophically. Very interesting. One thing is for sure, that if a guy gives tzedakah, he gets rewarded. What about if he gives tzedakah, but he doesn't believe in God? That's the question. Is he leading a good life that's worthy of reward? Or a good life has to come about because of divine guidance, not because of human introspection? But this isn't Birchat Hashem. He's not maledicting God. Okay? Chas v'chalila. He's not maledicting. But he's acting like Mordechai Kaplan. You understand? A lot of ink has been spilled on this. And it would appear logically that if a guy observes Shabbos, how's he? All right, it's very nice. You observe Shabbos. You know, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Geisha Shama Shabbos, Chayiv Misa, Geisha Lamad Torah. But all right, we're not going into that now. I can explain that, but that's not important now. But what's important? So the guy, I knew Goyim in Holland. My son-in-law, Reb Chaim, is very heavily involved with the Scandinavian countries, which they want to learn about Judaism. They're friends of Israel, real friends. So when I visited there, I spoke before these group. I couldn't believe it. I come into their homes, they show me the art scroll Chumash, the art scroll Magza. They only buy kosher products. They have separation of meat and milk. They're mad at the church for changing Shabbos to Sunday. But do they get any reward for not eating meat and milk together? Do they get any reward for observing Shabbos? Logically speaking, no. What do they have to do? It's not part of the Sheva Mitzvah. All right, what's the source? Igrot Moshe, Yoredeya, Chelik Sheni. The second time Reb Moshe dealt with Yoredeya, 1973. And it's Siman Zion. And it's a very interesting tshuva to Reb Yisrael Shapansky. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He wrote Svarim on Minhag Minhag Eretz Yisrael. He wrote for the Mizrahi publications. He was a real Talmud Chacham. If I'm not mistaken, he was the uncle of Yosef Chaim Klausner, who I mentioned earlier. I believe it was his mother's brother. I'm working from memory, if I'm not mistaken. Siman Zion, a tshuva written to him in 1961. And it's exactly, Be'inyan akum she'osin mitzvot she'enem mitzuvim mi mitzvat ha-Torah im yesh lechem scha. And this is exactly the question. Now, what came up? They found a Me'iri. Not found. They discovered a new manuscript of the Me'iri. One after another of the Me'iri appeared. The Me'iri dealt with this very problem. And Rav Avram Sofer edited the Me'iri. Now, does the name Rav Avram Sofer mean anything to you, Professor Sofer? Professor Sofer, as you can tell from the name, was a direct descendant, son after son, of the Chatan Sofer. He himself wound up in Israel, saved from the Holocaust. I believe he got here before the Holocaust. And like a number of others, wound up at JTS in the United States. At that time, and today it might be better in Israel, I don't know. Someone like Rav Avram Sofer might very well wind up in the Yeshiva Chesda, because the Yeshiva Chesda are much more open to Chachmat Yisrael as well on a higher level of editing Svarim. You all know how many nice Svarim have come out as a result of the Yeshiva Chesda. So it could be today they would have more positions here. You all know, it's well known that Hebrew University, which its golden circle, its most widely admired division, was their work in Chachmat Yisrael. Today they have a tremendous problem finding students who want to study scientific Jewish scholarship, because you can do it in some advanced programs in Yeshivat and Bar Ilan, and there's so many more openings that Hebrew youth suffers. Now, Rav Avram,
if I may just ask a question based on ignorance, what happened that all of a sudden they started to find the
Most of the Me'iri is found in the Vatican. But they knew, they found manuscripts elsewhere, and they knew there had to be more Me'iri, and evidently there was people knew what the Vatican, or there was
Oxford
rumor. Excuse me?
Oxford.
Well, they found elsewhere, Oxford, I think, Palmer in Italy, etc. But the heart of the Me'iri, if I'm not mistaken, came out of the Vatican, and there was one after another. In other words, one discovery led to another, and the Me'iri, 100 years ago, who heard of the Me'iri? Today you have Me'iri practically on Kol Hashas Kulo.
So that means we accept that it's not like the Chazon Ish said we're suffering.
No, well, you hear what Moshe has to say. Of course we learn with the Me'iri, but the question is, does it affect Halacha L'maisa? And Rav Avram Sofer has a footnote that it seems clear from the Me'iri. And remember, there's a whole problem with the textual reading in the Rambam and Hilchot Malachim. That's the whole problem here. We don't have a perfect text in the Rambam and Hilchot Malachim, and there's no Huntington manuscript. So much ink has been spilled. What is the Rambam Shita? So in a footnote, Professor Sofer says, it's obvious that the Me'iri holds that if a guy does mitzvot even beyond the Sheva mitzvot, he gets rewarded. And Rav Moshe takes him to task. He says, yes, if it's a mitzvah which it's shayach for a guy, like tzedakah, like kabbana, right? When Shlomo HaMelech dedicated the Beis HaMikdash, what was his prayer? That you should listen and accept the prayers of the Gentiles who send their kabbanot here. And he pleads with God to accept it graciously. So you see, a Gentile is shayach to tzedakah. A Gentile is shayach to kabbanot. There's a tshuva of Rav Avadya Yosef. What if a Gentile wants to give $1 million to Gris Kolel? Are you allowed to accept it? What? Okay, absolutely. This is like a karban. This is tzedakah. We accept from Gentiles. So they're shayach. Sheva mitzvot deshayach. But what a... Avol, I'm quoting Rav Moshe now. Avol b'shmirat shabbat v'yonta v'anachat tefillin v'tzitzit v'sukkah v'lulav v'shayfa v'achilat kashrut u'zehirah mishabbos u'kodoma ein lechem shum shcha al zeh. V'ein shayachim klal l'mitzvot eilu. Kivan v'leitonu b'kabbalat ha-Torah. V'einam mitzvot medidehu klal. These mitzvot, nothing to do with Gentiles. This is not staka. This is not a carbon. This is not sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach. Could very well be when Gentiles set up equitable systems of courts of justice that they're doing a mitzvah. Could very well be. This is part of the sheva mitzvot. Dinim. That we have to have courts, we have to have judgment. Could very well be. But Shabbos, Yontif, Tefillin, Tzitzit, Sukkah, Lulav. Look, how many Gentiles have mezuzot on their doors? You know how many tshuvot have been written? You sell a house and the Gentile says, leave the mezuzot on. It brought you good luck. I want it to bring me good luck. It's the Gentiles say, what is that mezuzah? It guards the house. It guarded the house for you. Let it guard the house for me. You know how many tshuvot have been written? All right. We're allowed to leave them, keep it. You have to tell them that they can't destroy it. If they're ever going to take it off, they have to give it to a rabbi, etc., etc. But one thing is for sure, a scha they don't have. It's not, why did they give Roosevelt in 1944? If you go to Hyde Park, the Roosevelt Mansion, the museum, you'll see a Sefer Torah given to Roosevelt by the National Council of Young Israel. No, Roosevelt opened up the Torah at Gelernt, he has a Schat Talmud Torah. You understand what I'm saying, Yehuda? What are we talking about here? Aye. Now they discovered a Meiri, and the Meiri seems to indicate they have reward. Look at the bottom of column 2 on page Tet Amid Aleph. Rav Moshe is very sharp. V'yeinonu achrayin al asforam hanim tzayim mechadosh meisek tabyad. Sheyesh litlot she eizah ta'ut nafabak tabyad. Oh, a talmid achad hosif zebe ta'ut. Just because you found the Ketav Yad, exactly like Reb Moshe, exactly, Reb Moshe is exactly like the Rav, exactly like the Chazon Ish, exactly like Reb Menashe HaKatan, exactly like every source we quoted until now. Don't confuse me with Ketav Yad. You found an old Ketav Yad? So it's a mistake. Copied incorrectly. 15 generations couldn't polish it. Or some Talmud who was daydreaming about football or baseball or whatever sport they had then. Well, when is their Super Sunday? When is the big day? Everyone is gearing up. Why you is? Is it no? Anyone know? Super Sunday. When is it? Next Sunday. Why you has a halftime show? I never. Wow. Bring them to wow. And we should have had at the seventh inning stretch. Why you could have put a show on in Yankel Stadium. Particularly this year, the Yankees finally have a Jewish ball player. Wow, Euclidus.
Big deal.
Big deal. No, Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. Herbie, don't be cynical. Be young. You have to. I have endless divrei Torah.
But the years don't say that.
No, a Rebbe has to live three periods at once: Shir Shirim, Mishlei, and Kohelet. And I have divrei Torah. Good. Open Gemara's to prove I'm right, but not for now. Talmud copied it. Then take a look at what Rav Moshe says. Hamagia, Harav Hagon, Rav Avram Sofa, that he thinks that a Ben Noach has scha even beyond the Sheva Mitzvah, and he wants to prove in a footnote that the Rambam thinks like this. Ain't a klum. Don't pay attention to that footnote. For Harambam vada yenu savur kain. As I proved before, logically, the Rambam can't possibly hold like this. And the Meiri, when he copied the Rambam, simply a mistake was made in the Ketav Yad.
Are there two issues here? one issue is we don't hold by what the Mitzvah, what our Mitzvah is our Mitzvah, and the past is the past.
Right.
Even though we disagree, it's not our Mitzvah.
Right.
That's one position.
Right.
But that's not what's being said here. What's being said is, since this doesn't agree with what we believe, this has to be a mistake. There are two different issues.
No, one second. I think the way the Rav said it clarifies it very well. On a theoretical level, you can have all the machloket in the world. On a practical level, you have to follow what your parents did, what the generation before you did.
Right, that doesn't seem to be what Rav
Moshe... No, well, Rav Moshe, what they're all explaining is because they're very bothered by the Ramah. You're going to see the Ramah paskin la'alacha that you have to pay attention to a ketav yad. So they're trying to say the ketav yad can't affect the practical aspect because who says the ketav yad is correct? There could be mistakes in the ketav yad.
Well, how do you know it's wrong?
How do you know it's wrong?
Yeah.
Of course, until now, no one held like this. Suddenly you find the ketav yad that goes against 15 other variant readings of the Rambam and you're going to follow it lahalacha. Rav Moshe can't accept that. The Rav can't accept it. Scientifically, you can prove Tchelet from today to tomorrow, but there's no tradition to it. That's what they're saying. You follow? But you're going to see there's another point of view. But that's what they're saying. Okay? And it's look at the Rav. Look at Sherim Lezecha B'Murray. The Rav develops it beautifully. It's proofs. I can also, I mean, it's a fascinating topic unto itself, but I just scratched the surface for what I need for this year. But where is this Rambam? Ah, okay. So this Rambam is Hilchot Malachim, Perek Chet, Halacha Yud Aleph. And this is one of the most widely discussed Rambams. Kol HaMakabel Sheva Mitzvot V'Nishcher La'Soltam HaReze MeChasidei Umat HaOlam V'Yesh Lo Chelek L'Yom Haba. So you see, in this Ketav Yad, it's only the Sheva Mitzvah that he has reward for. And then he says, and this is what, from the time of Mendelssohn on, endless discussion, for who sheyekabel otam v'yasotam mipnei shetziva b'hem HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'Torah. V'hodianu al yedei Moshe Rabbeinu. It's revealed. Bnei Noach are obligated. Avalim asamet nechekrat hadat. He's a philosopher. He reached his own conclusion. Ein zeget toshav. V'yeno machasidi umat olam. But the Rambam leaves with one title. Ela mechach mehem. So wise man, he reached the decision that it's good to live with Sheva Mitzvah. It's good to have a court of law. It's good not to commit a sexual crime. It's good not to kill. It's good not to rob. He is a wise man. That is the Rambam. That is the text we have. There are variant readings. And it remains a fascinating enigma for the intellectual, philosophic mind. My dear students, we have reached the point of return now, but that will have to wait till next week. What began a few weeks ago with a very basic question, what do you do with the Ramah? New manuscripts. And we see here so many different viewpoints that say the same thing, so many different gedolim from some.
The Ramah is
what is it? Siman Chafhei, Sifkat and Bet in Shulchan Aruch Hashem Mishpat. But we'll get there, we'll get into the Ramah B'Iyin. Baruch Atah Melecholam Shekabrao. I believe it's Chafhei, Sifkat and Bet. I don't have the Ramah in front of me, but one second. Let me see. Maybe I do. One second. Let me be certain. No, I don't have the Ramah in front of me. It's back in the office already. But we're going to come to that Ramah in great detail, but not yet. Okay? So that was the starting point. And what do we do with all these new Kitvayat? And today we saw the Chazon Ish. We saw Mori Rebbe Soloveitchik. We saw Reb Moshe. Very fascinating issues. The Rav in dialogue with Professor Lieberman. We dealt with the whole question of the Kitvayat Avodat HaMelech. I gave you my approach. And I did mention there's another approach as well, which you cannot dismiss. It's an approach which is logical and may have some validity to it. And nevertheless, everyone here comes down the same way. As Reb Moshe says, who says the Ketav Yad is right? The Chazon Ish says, who needs the Ketav Yad? Reb Chaim rejoiced over Ketav Yad, because he only dealt with it intellectually, not halacha l'maisa. The Chafetz Chaim was upset over Ketav Yad because he counted Shitat, and when there's a new Ketav Yad, you have a new sheet that counts. It enters into the Cheshbon. My dear students, a good memory on what? Okay, good. We've now come to the high point. Next week, I turn everything around and show you an exact opposite, different point of view, and I raise one of the most fascinating hashkafic questions you will have to deal with and deal with now already in your lives as B'nai Torah. Tomorrow morning, to get into Shir, it's $36,000 to the IOU list. If you're smiling, then we won't record it. But wow, the material tomorrow, epic making. Finally, before I give out the freebies, again I announce, right after the government is established, I'll knock off one Monday as a Hashkafa lecture. If anyone has any specific questions, not in Israeli politics, that I'll deal with, I'll explain, we'll see what happens. Because as some of you I see are Israelis already, and you're involved, and you're happy, and you're sad, and I'm just warning you, don't take it that seriously. Because Masha Haya, Kusheyiyeh, politicians, Rakefet is a dummy, because I can tell you today during davening, the one part he concentrated on more than anything was Lamal Shinim Altihi Tikva. And when you concentrate on that, it's not a good sign. Anyway, if you have any other questions, submit them to Danny or to Moshe. You'll give them to me the minute I announce, and we'll try to put it all together. This is for Yitzchak. Anyone a fan of Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, Sefer Devarim, his Sichat. Okay? This, Steve, I think you will appreciate it. Yavna Studies in Pashat HaShavua. This is ancient history when they began. This is put out by the Beit Sefer for a secular school, Beit Sefer Mamlachti. How do you teach about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Very, very interesting material, how they do it. And here is an article by Menachem Friedman on the state of Israel and the problems it raises theologically for religious Jews. Anyone know who Menachem Friedman is? He's the top Israeli sociologist in dealing with problems of Tzionim, Datiyim, and Haredim in the state of Israel. Right. He is at Bar Ilan. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'danya.
You know, one of my teachers in Bokertown was Tzvi Yehuda.
I know that, of course I know that.
And he was...